Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I'd like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. And once again, we have a very exciting program lined up today. We have Alan Mackey. He joins our program once every other week and comes on with a lot of interesting things to share with our viewers. And Alan, once again, I'd like to welcome you to the program today.
Well, thanks for having me again, Stuart.
Alan, today we're going to be talking about a very interesting program, and our discussion is interpreting the minimum wage debate. What does it all mean? And of course, you're really on top of minimum wage with political groups that you associate with, various organizations, organized meetings that you have there in Minnesota, and keeping up with what's going on around the country. So today we're going to get into a few things in regards to minimum wage, because I know you and I are on the same page. Much of this debate centered around raising the minimum wage to like $9 an hour, talks of raising it to $15 an hour, and we realize that that's not enough. What is really required in regards to making certain that the needs of working people are met? Alan?
Well, like I pointed out in what I wrote today about Robert Reich coming out in favor of the $15 an hour, you know, Robert Reich was the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, and he did a lot of damage to working people and the working class. And he's been talking, you know, about a minimum wage. First, he started out at $9.50, then he went to Obama's $10.10, and now he says he's at $15 an hour that the minimum wage should be. But this is very interesting, coming from a former Secretary of Labor. He's pulling these numbers from a hat. You know, he worked, he was the head of the United States Department of Labor and its Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Bureau of Labor Statistics keeps the most accurate records concerning cost of living. Why a man who was Secretary of Labor would not pull out these figures and compare these figures with wages is just mind-boggling. You know, every working-class family in this country is experiencing a cost-of-living crisis. That means that they can't make ends meet, many of them from paycheck to paycheck. Many people aren't even getting a paycheck. We have 40 million workers living in poverty in this country. We have another 90 million workers, according to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, who are just one or two paychecks away from poverty or one serious illness. And a hospital bill will crush many working people if it's, you know, from a heart attack or a stroke
right.
or a cancer. And, you know, all of this, including health care costs, college tuitions, when you go to the store to buy milk or eggs, butter, bread, all this is cost of living. If a worker can't go to work and expect to receive in wages what it costs that worker to live, him or her, you know, we're in a serious problem in this country. And here in Minnesota, the state legislature, which is a Democratic supermajority, each and every one of these politicians from the Democratic Party campaigned on the Democratic Party platform, which calls for a minimum wage that is a non-poverty wage. A non-poverty wage in this country is anywhere between $22 and $26 an hour, and that's just barely over poverty. You barely make ends meet. Even at that wage, you probably need two or three credit cards maxed out to survive. And,
you know,
it's mind-boggling why Robert Reich wouldn't use the facts and figures from his own Department of Labor. He knows that these are the most accurate facts and figures concerning cost of living, the Consumer Price Index. These people like Robert Reich, then they talk about...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, they talk about inflation and indexing this minimum wage, this like $9.50 here in Minnesota, indexed to inflation, and the state legislators set a maximum of 2.5%. Well, get out your calculator and figure out what 2.5% a year is when you on $9.50 an hour, less than a 25-cent raise. You know, that
right.
won't be enough. Then it takes place in 2018. These Democrats and Robert Reich are
2018.
Playing, 2018, the cost of living index for inflation will kick in. The $9.50 minimum wage here in Minnesota will only kick in 2016. So these people are playing a very mean game with working people's lives. They know that there's a cost of living crisis, and they can't even utter those words. This is a disgrace.
Yeah, Alan, I want to look at some of these figures. Census figures released in September 2013 confirmed that record high numbers of Americans are living in poverty. The latest data reveals one out of seven people in the United States, the USA, are living in poverty. In 2012, 46.5 million people were living in poverty in the United States, the largest number in the 54 years of the census. In the 54 years, the census has measured poverty. The poverty rate also remained at high levels, 15% for all Americans and 21.8% for children under the age of 18. Alan, these are some mind-blowing figures that I'm looking at here. I mean, you're talking about 46.5 million people. I mean, our listeners, you're really just, you know, they should have their mouths wide open, you know, just even trying to fathom what those numbers are all about. Almost one out of 16 people in the USA are living in deep poverty, people with income 50% below the poverty line are commonly referred to as living in deep poverty. Census figures show that in 2012, 6.6 of our population, or 20.4 million people, were living in deep poverty. Alan, these numbers are crazy, and we're talking about, what, $9.50 an hour?
Yeah, and in Wisconsin,
I mean,
the Democrats proposed $7.60 an hour. And, you know, many of the states that passed these minimum wages, along with cost of living, which is just terrible. You know, the COLA is just despicable that they would even consider 2.5%. And this is the maximum. The governor has the right to make it even less. And, you know, the poverty in this country at this time, at a time when profits, corporate profits, the Wall Street profits are soaring, they're breaking all records.
At record levels.
Exactly. And, you know, billions and billions of dollars these Wall Street investors are reaping in profits. And the only reason they're reaping these kinds of super profits is because they're reaping them off the backs of the working people who have created this wealth and who are getting poverty wages. You know, these politicians, they will not talk about the fact that if you pay a working person a poverty wage, that worker and their family is going to be living in poverty. I mean, this is something so basic and so simple, and yet these people are so arrogant, and they just deny this very basic truth, and it's sickening. You know, I've tried to talk to many of these politicians. I've probably talked to over 120 of the 200-some politicians, state legislators here in Minnesota. And they do not even want to hear the word poverty wages. You know, they are using the levers of government to depress wages so that these corporations and the employers can reap huge profits, and they're doing nothing to control the prices of anything, whether it's gas or propane or bread or milk or anything else. How come they can push wages down? And then they got the nerve to make these wages go into effect in 2016 and 2018 and 2015. You know, when the wages supposedly rise to $9.50 here in Minnesota in 2016, the people, their purchasing power will be less than what it is now at $6.15 an hour. Anybody can figure this out. why Robert Reich refuses to bring these kinds of facts and figures forward is just mind-boggling. It's got to be because he's an outright liar and is trying to distort the truth. You know, here's a man that sat in silence in the Clinton administration.
It's obvious that we're in an election year. They have all the big names coming out. You know, they're trying to trying to increase the popularity of these Democrats that they're on the side of working families. And Alan, we know that's nothing but a lie. Hey, Alan, what are gas prices like there in Minnesota?
Well, I just bought gas. I just filled up my car. That's why I was sort of late getting on here. $3.69 a gallon.
Yeah, you're probably choking. I know, Ellen. Yep. Here in California, $4.27 a gallon that I paid yesterday. $4.27. It's gone up 40 cents. It's gone up a lot quicker than my wages. Let me tell you, Alan.
And these politicians have done nothing to control these prices, but yet they.
Hey, wouldn't it be nice if we were talking about cost of living increases going up at the same rate that we're talking about the increase in oil prices,
exactly.
Of gasoline prices?
We
would be set. No, we wouldn't be talking about. We could put minimum wage aside. We wouldn't need to talk about that anymore. But
right.
Alan, let's look at some other things. I looked in the paper, and we were talking about these pathetic $9.50 an hour, $7.25 an hour. Who in the world at part-time jobs at that? Here in California, Chula Vista, furnished apartment. Pool, got a pool too, and parking, street parking. The cost of that apartment is $790. Now, someone making minimum wage, Alan, I don't think they could afford that apartment. $790, at least they wouldn't be able to eat, you know. And they definitely couldn't afford it if they were working a part-time job. Downtown San Diego includes utilities. $750 a month. $750 a month in downtown San Diego. Lemon Grove, $790 plus water, trash, pool, and Wi-Fi. $790. I still think at minimum wage you really can't afford that. Oceanside, one-bedroom apartment, $925 a month. Oceanside roommate, 45 and older, $550 a month. Alan, when we're talking about these increases that these politicians are talking about at up to $9.50 an hour, even with trying to afford a place to stay in California is almost impossible anywhere in the state. What is it like there in Minnesota? What is it like there in other parts of the country?
Well, people are paying, if you want to rent a house, you're talking anywhere from probably $1,100 to $1,400 a month. On top of that,
and what
I
about,
just,
what about
the family
propane?
Earlier this morning, and they have a propane bill that you wouldn't believe from this winter, $6,000 that they don't know how they're going to pay.
$6,000?
So they have to work
the better part of a year, just to pay for their propane.
Yeah,
the whole family.
Propane went from $1.45 a gallon to $4.25 a gallon, and we had.
Alan, am I missing something here? Am I missing something? This sounds crazy. And we're talking about $9.25, $9.50 an hour.
Yeah, and the state legislators have the. I had probably 36 Minnesota state legislators tell me to my face that I was exaggerating when I say that there's a cost of living crisis for working class families in this country. They have the nerve to say this. And see, these politicians and the millionaire labor leaders and these foundation-funded outfits with their directors that get $100,000 and $150,000 a year, they don't understand any of this because they don't have to worry about what they're going to purchase. They got all the money they need to purchase anything they want. And they have no concept of what it's taking for a working-class family to try and make ends meet. And this is a serious problem in this country. And if working people who are facing and experiencing these problems don't start to run for public office, if we don't start to build movements involving these people that are being hurt like this, you know, we're going to be in a sad, sad situation, because we can see what Wall Street and these companies can do to people. We see what they're doing to people overseas. They've taken jobs from the American workers and shipped them overseas where there's low wages and people are treated even worse. They're going to treat the American working class the exact same way. That's the way Wall Street operates. Maximum profits, that's all they care about. All this monopoly price fixing that's going on, it's a disgrace that the government hasn't stepped in and enforced some kind of price controls and rolled back the prices. They could easily do it. Everybody with any common sense and a little bit of intelligence understands there's no reason for the price of gas to be around $4 a gallon. They understand there's no reason for propane to be $4.25 a gallon. They understand that there's no reason to pay the prices for 90% of the stuff in the stores. You know, you see from week to week, a pound of butter can go up 15, 20 cents. You know, these people are just ripping working people off left and right. The price of hamburger, I just went to the store right now. The price of hamburger, $4.99 a pound. You know, this is an outright ripoff.
There goes that minimum wage.
Exactly. And these politicians, they don't understand it and they don't want to understand it. They're so arrogant and out of touch because they're being bribed by these corporations that are making the profits. The governor of this state, Mark Dayton, who's supposed to be a big liberal, he himself is a billionaire. His money comes from the Dayton Hudson Company, and the family owns Target stores, and they're paying these people these pathetic, miserly minimum wages. And this is how these people become billionaires. And they have the nerve. Mark Dayton, the governor of the state, had the nerve to go meet in secrecy with the Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and assure them that he would not allow the minimum wage to go over $8 in the first step. And that's exactly what happened. You know, this is a disgrace. He went all over the state and campaigned on the promise that he was going to make the minimum wage a real living wage. Anybody can get on their computer and look at the Democratic Party platform, and that's what it calls for. I know, because I wrote what's in the platform. And it passed almost unanimously through the state convention here in Minnesota, supporting a minimum wage that is a non-poverty wage. Now these people get elected,
and the point, they can switch.
If they were retail operators, they'd be in prison.
You had pointed out in one of your commentaries here, thoughts for the day, you said, the point is these Democrats promise a living, non-poverty wage, and they should be kept. They should be kept to their promises. A living wage is not the same as a pay raise. Could you explain what the difference is between getting a living wage and a pay raise? Because there is a big difference. There's an extreme
working
difference.
Working people aren't going to turn their backs on any pay raise, whether it's 15 cents or 5 cents or 25 cents. You know, working people appreciate raises, but when a politician campaigns on the promise of bringing forward a living, non-poverty wage, and then they go to $9.50 an hour once they're elected and push that legislation through with a supermajority of Democrats, this is just an outright swindle of the working people. It's a betrayal of the working people.
What do you call it, bait and switch?
Bait and switch. You know, you see advertisements a lot of times in the papers where a company will advertise something at one price, and you go in and you want that, and they don't have it, and they say, oh, we'll sell you this over here, and it's a product that's not as good as what they advertise, and it's more. That's bait and switch, and it's illegal. Well, in politics, these politicians are playing this bait and switch game, and it should be illegal, too. But the only way is none of these politicians are going to go to jail for what they've done. The only thing that can be done is as working people, we have to organize and we got to make it so that people won't go and vote for these people ever again. This is terrible. They did the same thing to us with single payer. And, you know, Robert Reich was involved in that too. All these big-name people in the Democratic Party who they pull out all the time, you know, and Richard Trumka and all these people, they pulled the exact same crap on us with single payer. They demolished the single payer movement, and then they pushed through Obamacare. They've done the same thing with the minimum wage now. They promised a living wage, and they pushed through another poverty wage. They can say that
sound like bait and switch to me,
but that's not what we voted for.
You're talking about Robert Reich, he doesn't understand about what jobs are and how important jobs are to people. Because I noticed one thing you mentioned right here for the idea that he had mentioned a lousy job. He doesn't even understand that a job is not lousy, not if it's paying right.
A job is not a lousy job if it pays a person a living wage and the people have decent benefits and they're treated respectfully and have rights and a voice at work. A lot of people do not understand this if they're not working people. I call them muddle-headed middle-class overpaid intellectuals. They do not understand that when a working person is forced to work at a job and they're working at-will employment, which means that they can be fired whenever an employer decides they want to fire them for no reason at all, then, they have no rights in that workplace. And that's how the majority of the American people, working class, is working right now, with the exception of the 10 to 12% that are organized and are protected by a union contract. But 80% of the workers in this country work at-will employment, and they have no rights at all in the job. If they start coming out and talking about we want a living non-poverty minimum wage, that employer is going to fire them. We've seen what Walmart has done. We see what these casinos managements have done all over the country. They fire people left and right because they start talking about they want a living and a decent wage. Now, Robert Reich likes to throw up, as lousy jobs working in Burger King and McDonald's. Those are not lousy jobs. They're lousy paying jobs, and the workers have no rights, and they're treated like crap in those places. We all know that. And there's nothing wrong with a person making hamburgers and French fries or fried chicken. The only thing when it becomes wrong and it becomes a lousy job is when these people are not paid a living wage. And that's what we got to begin to talk about. Robert Reich and these people do not understand this, that every job is a good job. I don't know anybody that's unemployed right now that won't take almost any job that they're offered, and they'll figure that they got a good job. But that job is a lousy job if they don't get a decent living wage, and if they don't have decent benefits, and if they don't have real job security. You know, this is a disgrace. We talk about this country being the world's greatest bastion of democracy, and a working person can't even open their mouth at work that they think that they're being paid, underpaid for what they're doing. You know, this is a disgrace. This is not democracy.
I'm looking at, again, these are some of the things that you have mentioned. You said, so this begs the question, why would Robert Reich keep proposing minimum wages that are substantially less than what it costs for the working class families to survive? I mean, here he was supporting $9.50 in one state, $10.10 an hour. Now he's saying $15 an hour. Even $15 an hour. Let's understand what poverty is all about, Alan.
Well, poverty,
$15 an hour doesn't take you out of poverty. You're still living in poverty.
Exactly. But the irony is,
and he's promoting this. He's promoting this crapola.
But look what he's done. When he's been proposing the $15, he's waited until almost all the Democratic supermajority states have passed a poverty minimum wage. And then he comes out afterwards and says, we should have $15 an hour. We didn't ask for enough. Well, we got the same thing with single payer. Richard Trumka and Robert Reich and all these people, they ditched the single payer movement. They made it so that people couldn't do anything or say anything to get a place at the table for single payer. And now look what happened after Obamacare comes about. All these union big shots says, let's form an organization for single payer. They know they're not going to fight for single payer, but they're trying to trick us into believing that they are because they don't want us, the grassroots and the rank-and-file working people, to start movements for these things. This is why Robert Reich came out for $15. People say, since Robert Reich came out for $15, we don't have to worry anymore. We're going to get a $15 minimum wage. Well, he came out with that after the fact. He could have come into Minnesota. He could have come here and made speeches up and down the state and explained why a $15 minimum wage was needed, and he would have put these Democratic state legislators on the spot and helped force them to at least increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which, like you point out, is still a poverty wage, but it's a start. It's a And, you know, this bugs me because we haven't had a national approach as the left or, you know, as liberals and progressives. We haven't had a national approach to this whole thing about the minimum wage and living wages and cost of living. There's been no discussion. One group comes and says, oh, it should be $15. But they don't explain what they based that $15 on. They took that $15 from the United States Census Bureau and their poverty levels, which are skewed to start with, because they don't include, they only include four parts of what is the cost of living. The United States Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics has eight parts with 200 subcategories where they track the consumer price index. You know, this is the most accurate figures that we have in this country. Robert Reich was the head of the United States Department of Labor, and he knows that. And this should bother every single person in this country that he isn't using those facts and figures from the department that he headed up. If he believes that those figures are wrong, this guy should have the moral and ethical and intellectual integrity to come forward and say why those figures are wrong. But he knows that those figures are right, and he knows that if he used those figures, he would be talking about a minimum wage between $22 and $26 an hour, depending on what region of the country people live in. You know, and this is a disgrace that he wouldn't use the figures from the department that he headed. Just a total disgrace. It's just total dishonesty.
Well, once again, I just want to mention that we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program once again. He comes on every other week. And today we're discussing a very interesting subject here. And the subject today is interpreting the minimum wage debate. And Alan, once again, I would like to thank you for joining the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Stuart.
Alan, we've heard just recently, within the last year and a half, Elizabeth Warren, she has come out and saying that wages, the minimum wage should be set just under $23 an hour. And I don't even think $23 an hour is enough, especially when you consider the types of profits that are being reaped from these big corporate giants and the executives on Wall Street, and it's being done on the backs of labor. But, Alan, even if they were talking about $23 an hour, I mean, that's not enough when you consider, you know, the cost of living, when you consider for housing, when you consider for transportation, when you consider the needs of a family trying to raise kids. Alan, in your opinion, even someone talking about $23 an hour, does that meet the needs for working people?
Well, a family of four with two adults and two children under 18, they could probably just barely squeeze by, and they wouldn't be living what we would call a decent life, but they would just be out of poverty according to the figures. What real life their real life experiences, that's another matter. I maintain that they'd have to have two or three credit cards and living off of those too, in order to have a halfway decent standard of living. And they would never get out of the debt from under those credit cards. But getting back to Elizabeth Warren, she did say that the minimum wage should be $22 and something an hour. But after she said that, she turned right around and she supported Obama and his $10.10 an hour. You know, this is
right.
What really boggles my mind, that these people would have the nerve to say, here's what it should be, but yet we'll settle for $10.10. Who are these people speaking for? You know, let them live on $10.10 an hour. We had a group of Democrats here in Minnesota that made a great big to-do that they were going to live on $7.25 an hour, what would be comparable to $7.25 an hour for 1 week. And they came back and they said, oh, we can't do it. Well, we all know that nobody can live on $7.25 an hour. The question is, why didn't they try and live on the $9.50 an hour that they were proposing
right.
as legislation? That would have been the real test. And again, this is the kind of dishonesty that we're up against with these hypocritical politicians that have no concern for working people and the way working people are living in this country today. under this cost of living crisis. You can go to a grocery store and ask anybody, and if they're a working person, they will tell you that they're having problems making ends meet, and they will tell you that I've come across people in the store where their kids are begging their parents, can we have milk this week? And their parents will say,
right.
Well, we either got to buy milk or we got to buy this or that. Which do you want? You know, what kind of country are we living in? We're living in the richest country in the world, and a parent has to make a decision whether or not to buy milk for their children? This is,
let me ask you, Alan, are we really living in the richest country in the world?
Well, we are, but the problem is
let's think about for a moment the people. Right, exactly. The people that produce it have nothing. And far less than 1% of the population has it all. So, I mean, we're really working for, the super elite in this society. But,
I just heard a figure yesterday about the Koch brothers. You know, their wealth is the equivalent of the bottom 40% of the people in this country. This is the kind of how out of whack things are in this country.
Wow.
And extremely wealthy people, which is probably about a quarter of a percent of the 1% who have this extreme wealth, and they're all opposed to people having a living wage. They're opposed to people getting unemployment compensation after they lay them off because they move the jobs overseas someplace. You know, what kind of people are we dealing with? These people don't deserve to be in any kind of decision-making position at all, not in their own companies and certainly not in the government. The government is supposed to be, according to our Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, it's supposed to work for we the people. Who are the majority of the people in this country? Working people. And yet it's working people that are being treated like crap, and their lives are being destroyed left and right in this country so that these super wealthy people can become even wealthier. This is just totally sick.
Alan, when we talk about labor, I just want to focus a little bit of what I see in this, what you wrote. I'm not certain who Lydia is, but it was a letter that you had written to Lydia. And you were talking about cheap labor means higher profits. Explain to our listeners when corporations can, gain cheap labor, how it equates to more profits to these corporate owners.
Well, Marx pointed out a long time ago that there's only two sources of wealth, labor and Mother Nature. And when an employer hires a worker to do a job, they get paid so much an hour, whether it's $7 or $15 an hour. So the worker gets paid an hourly wage. But the capitalist, the owner of the mines and the mills and the factories in this country, they own what those workers produce. And this is where exploitation takes place. And this is why we have this extreme discrepancy between the wealth of this 1% and the rest of the people, because wages have not been going up. You have these millionaire labor leaders who all that they can negotiate is concession contract after concession contract at a time when the profits are soaring out of sight. This doesn't even make sense. And yet, their role is to help these corporations keep profits up and wages down. This is just totally wrong. These people, like Richard Trumka and these 56 or 58 people that sit on the AFL-CIO's executive council, every single one of them is a millionaire, and they've made their millions off the dues of working people they're supposed to be representing. And the only thing they can do at a time when profits are soaring is negotiate, and I put that in quotation, that word negotiate. The only thing they can negotiate is a concessionary contract. This is a disgrace. And this is why none of these people want to talk about cost of living. Richard Trumka is afraid to talk about a cost of living crisis. All over the world, labor leaders are talking about the cost of living crisis that working people are experiencing. I can show you article after article from the Guardian newspaper in Britain, from the French media. All the politicians all over the world that claim to represent working people are talking about a cost of living crisis that the working class families in their countries are experiencing. This is the only country in the world where we haven't heard those words, cost of living crisis, from one single politician. In fact, I think I'm the only person in this country using that phrase right now. And
think it's two of us.
I hope there's at least two of us. But in a country of 300 million people, and we have all these millionaire labor leaders, and the words cost of living crisis doesn't even come through their lips, this is a disgrace. This is the crisis of this country, of the world right now. Working people are being squeezed so these corporations can make these huge profits. And it's the labor, like I said, labor is producing this wealth. People go to work. They work 8 hours a day for a certain hourly pay, and yet they're producing way, way beyond what they're being paid in their wages, and that's why these corporations are reaping these super profits. This is how the capitalist system works. And, you know, in the final analysis, if we don't start talking about challenging Wall Street for a political and economic power, you know, we're going to be in one heck of a mess in this country, you know, worse than what we are right now. We're in a bad mess right now. But if we let this continue, if we let the people like these Koch brothers and all these other very extremely wealthy people like John Maynard, who owns Menards, and the people that control the auto industry and the steel mills and the mines, you know, if we let them continue to make the decisions in this country, oh, geez, we're going to be living like people, worse than people live in third world countries. You know, and there's no reason for it.
No.
If we really had this kind of poverty, if there really wasn't this wealth, it would be one thing. But the wealth is there. I forgot what the figure is. I think it's something like these people have made $34 billion or trillion off of the labor of working people since this crisis, this economic crisis has hit the capitalist world. How is this possible? We have an economic crisis, and these people are making profits that are soaring out of sight, record profits like never before. How is that possible?
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Possible because
and the thing is, people don't understand since this economic crisis started in 2008, we have seen the wealth of the richest in the world. I mean, it has been soaring at record levels. And then we see where it's a call for austerity measures on a global scale. And people
right.
don't understand that when they start, you know, they're calling for austerity measures in other countries when they're trying to suppress wages and income here in this country, Alan. That's austerity. When they say that we want you to earn less and they start raising the prices on everything, this is the same thing that is happening in other parts of the world. So it's basically the same as austerity.
Exactly. It's a form of austerity that's being pushed down the throats of the American people. And the bottom line is the main reason for this austerity is that not only that do these corporate executives not want to give up the profits that they're reaping as a result of exploiting labor, but the other thing aspect is that working people are being expected to pay for this militarism and these dirty imperialist wars. And, you know, that's why we're facing this austerity with the cuts to the social programs and everything else. You know, Robert Reich should be ashamed to even start talking about a minimum wage, because he was part of the Clinton administration. He sat in silence while Bill Clinton smashed the welfare. He sat in silence and supported NAFTA. You know, he talks about lousy jobs. This guy is the biggest hypocrite I've ever heard of. Here he sits talking about lousy jobs and a minimum wage of $15 an hour, which he started out at $9.50, and then he went to $10.10 and now $15.
NAFTA
but he shipped
destroyed
all of our jobs overseas.
NAFTA destroyed good-paying jobs on both sides of the border. It destroyed good-paying jobs and good incomes from people in Mexico and south of the border. It destroyed good jobs and incomes for people north of the border. So, I mean, as you mentioned, he should be the last person to speak. I mean, he's a job destroyer.
Exactly. And he made the jobs lousy jobs. You know,
good point.
As a result of what he did, when you have this massive amount of people who are unemployed, and being paid poverty wages. This is a club over the head of every worker in this country, and it pushes wages down. You know, a cop can come out and beat people over the head during a strike with his billy club, and that's one way to push wages down, to smash the strikes. But, you know, they're using the levers of government to enforce poverty wages in this country, which creates this massive and huge pool of poverty-waged workers. And these workers, naturally, they want a better life, and so they're going to take any job. There's not a union in this country, I don't think, right now that dares to go out on strike because they know there's people there that will take those jobs. They'll start working as cabs. And this is what, you know, the corporations, and this is what Wall Street wants, where people, where working people are made afraid to speak out and take action to improve their lives and their livelihoods. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there's no other reason to have a union other than to improve the lives and livelihoods of workers. We don't need unions to negotiate concession contracts. You know, the UAW.
Well, let me ask you, you're talking about unions negotiating. In your opinion, do you see where these unions in the U.S. are even democratically run?
Well, there's no democracy at all in the unions.
I've been a member of several unions. Is no democracy associated with unions in this country today?
No, several workers when there was the American Crystal Sugar told workers that they weren't going to negotiate with them and that they'd be locked out of a job. Several workers at a union meeting says, you know, we should take over these plants and not allow them to lock us out, or otherwise we're in a position of losing. And these so-called union leaders actually had their thugs go and threaten these workers and their families and threaten to beat them up and everything. You know, this is not democracy. They didn't even allow a discussion if the plant should be taken over rather than allow the company to lock them out. You know, this is happening. These lockouts are taking place all over the country. We're not hearing about a lot of them unless you pay close attention to what's going on in labor, because the newspapers don't talk about it. But these lockouts are taking place all over. The companies figure they have the upper hand, and they can tell workers, take our offer or leave it, and if you don't take it, we're going to lock you out and we're going to bring in scabs. And that's what happened at American Crystal, and it's happening all over this country. And that's the other thing that Democrats should be doing right now, where they have supermajorities. They should be passing anti-lockout legislation and anti-scab legislation, and they're refusing to do this. They won't even consider it.
Yeah, I'm just going to focus on a couple of things that you mentioned a few minutes ago. But first of all, I just want to mention once again that we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program. He comes on every other week and discuss many important issues. Today we were discussing interpreting the minimum wage debate. And, Alan, once again, I want to thank you for joining the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Alan, one of the things that you mentioned which is very important, we're talking about raising the minimum wage to $8.50, $9.50, $10.10 an hour, shooting it out anywhere from 4 to even 6 years in the future, many of these states. So really, that, you know, just very typical of Washington and the Democrats and these state legislators, they're promising the pie in the sky. But,
right,
Alan, when you really think about the profits that you were talking about that is being made there on Wall Street, it's in the trillions of dollars. This nation has not experienced such wealth, Alan, within the last half century. And we could be talking about increasing the minimum wage to $25 an hour when we consider the shift in income, when you consider what the working people are making and the earnings of these corporate executives that are working there on Wall Street and the people that they're working for. Alan, we could be talking about $25 an hour when you consider how money is being shifted from the working class to the super elite. So when we have this discussion, Alan, these numbers that I'm looking at of $10 and $9 an hour, I mean, it's a joke. And people need to understand that we're really negotiating with our livelihoods. I mean, exactly. We really should, as you mentioned, we should be talking about a living wage, because all only thing we're doing is enhancing the living standards of these people that want to buy bigger yachts, want to buy another island, want to buy several more mansions. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, and they got so much money that they don't even know what to do with it anymore.
They don't even know what to do with it.
You know, there's only so much that they can buy and what they can use. You know, this this whole thing with wealth is getting so out of whack compared to what the how the majority of the people in this country live. It's a total disgrace. And these politicians don't even want to talk about redistribution of wealth. One politician told me, you know, you come in here talking to me about a national public health care system. You come in here talking about raising the minimum wage to $23 or $26 an hour. He says, nobody's going to agree with that. The fact is, if you go anyplace and start talking to people, almost everybody will agree with that. It's only the politicians that disagree with it, and they disagree because they know that if they agree with that, they will not get these bribes from the corporations. We've got an entire government from the local to the state and federal government with nothing but a bunch of bribed, corporate bribed politicians running the show. Working people have no voice in this country. And, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, you know, violence. We don't want anybody resorting to violence or anything. Things have to be done through the ballot. Well, working people have been pushed out of the ballot box. You know, it doesn't make any difference that we have the right to vote. If we vote for politicians that tell us that they're going to legislate a real living non-poverty wage, and then they come along and pass this $9.50 an hour, you know, this makes our vote totally useless. You know, they know that we voted for them for a real living wage, and yet they reneged on that promise. What does that say about our vote? Totally useless. And, you know, the same thing happened in the 1960s. People were pushed and pushed down so low. You know, people say, oh, you know, we had these peaceful demonstrations and Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and everything. But this isn't the truth. You know, Lyndon Johnson didn't do a darn thing until every single major American city was burning, literally burning. The major cities and even some of the smaller cities, they were all burning and on fire before this government decided to act. This has been the history of this government. Back in the 1930s, you know, Roosevelt wasn't going to give working people anything. He was forced to because millions of people were out in the streets. Why haven't millions of people come out into the streets now? Because the very people that supported Barack Obama, these labor leaders, these millionaire labor leaders, and all these people from the foundation-funded outfits that said they were going to hold Obama's feet to the fire if people would only vote for him, they would get that he was liberal and they would get a progressive agenda out of him. None of these people have done a darn thing to bring people out into the streets. And that's where real change takes place, and that's the only thing the politicians in this country have ever listened to, is when people got so fed up and so angry that they took to the streets by the millions. Unemployment compensation and the minimum wage and everything, literally millions of people filled the streets of this country. In many places, the police shut them down. Henry Ford had work
right,
shut down because they were demanding a real living wage. The Battle of the Overpass. You know, in Chicago, the steel workers were shot down. You know, workers left and right have been beat over the head. They've been clubbed by the police. They've been shot. You know, we've got police in this country right now. We see what they're doing to Occupy Wall Street. The FBI sent over 500 FBI agents into the Occupy Wall Street movement to disrupt it. You know, because they knew what was going to happen. They knew that the American people were looking very closely and thinking about, you know, what kind of movement do we need to take power away from Wall Street, and they had to stop it. This, in their eyes, they had to stop this movement. They could not allow it to continue, and our tax dollars were used to send 500 FBI agents into the Occupy Wall Street movement to destroy it. This is not democracy.
You know, I just want to just make a comment on when I was married back in the 70s, I had a brother-in-law, and I'm just thinking about, you know, big corporations and how they can they can spend big money as long as it's going to increase their profits. And many of us remember the Alaskan oil pipeline that was back in the 70s, and now we have the Keystone XL project, which has been supported by Obama and his administration,
and
is going to create good-paying jobs, but it's not going to create good-paying jobs for working people. Of course, myself, I'm completely opposed to this project because it's going to be disastrous to the environment. We're looking at future disasters, just like we have with BP and British Petroleum, and they create many of these oil wells that we see there in the Gulf. But after a disaster takes place, they try to let Mother Nature take care of all the damages, and while they're still reaping the profits. But back to my point, my brother-in-law at the time, he was working as a geologist, he was making over $65,000 a year. And I'm talking about in 1976. At the time, I had a good-paying job. I was working with Safeway Stores, and I was making less than $18,000 a year. But here, you're talking about the wealth that is being created for these big corporations where they were paying thousands and thousands of workers on that pipeline where it was just designed to create profits and wealth for these big corporations. And Alan, let's get away from just the oil companies. We see our labor that is going to develop the resources and manufacturing and production for these big corporations, and it's all being done to create super wealth and profits for these corporations. Back again, the owners of these corporations. Back again, what I was saying is that money can be created that will produce good-paying jobs, but there's a shift of wealth. The shift of wealth is we are working at poverty wages, and these big corporations, they have the money. They have the money for themselves, so they can afford fine lifestyles, and they have more than enough. They can't even figure out what to do with their wealth. And, Alan, this is the country, as you mentioned, the wealthiest country on the planet, and this is what we're surrounded with.
Yeah, it's criminal as far as I'm concerned. The whole system is just criminal in the way working people are treated, the very people who... You know, if you look at what's going on in this country, the workers who create this wealth are being exploited, and in the process of this exploitation, being severely mistreated and abused, their rights taken away, on the one hand. You know, and then we have two sources of wealth. There's only two known sources of wealth, labor and Mother Nature. So we know that these capitalists exploit labor, and while they're exploiting labor, they're using labor to rape Mother Nature, from which they also profit. You know, this is the way a society treats the two sources of wealth. This is criminal, you know. And
now, let me ask you: is this what's going on in the Middle East, where it's all about trying to reap the profits from Mother Nature? Where we see what is taking place in Libya, what we have seen take place there in Afghanistan, in Iraq, what we see taking place throughout parts of Europe. I mean, again, we have it where these big corporations, they can't obtain enough. I mean, first of all, it's austerity around the world, and then they're trying to rape the resources of the entire planet. Alan,
well,
I mean, it's a big cycle that I see going on here. Working people need to understand what is taking place in the world that they're living in.
Yeah, working people, instead of paying attention to these Keynesian economists like Robert Reich, they're going to have to start reading Karl Marx. You know, back in the 1930s, it wasn't until working people started studying Karl Marx and how the system really works that these large and huge movements developed. And this is going to have to take place again. Education is a big part of the process of organizing and mobilizing people. And we can't be afraid to be talking about socialism. There's a number of so-called leftists that have supported Obama. They call him a liberal politician with a progressive agenda, which is, you know, more outright lies. But, you know, this is holding back the development of the movement that we need in order to force some real changes in this country. People are going to have to start reading and studying Karl Marx. They're going to have to start taking a look at the socialist alternative to capitalism. And lots of people are, according to the polls, something like 30% of the American people are taking a new look at whether or not we should remain on the capitalist road or take the socialist road. And if socialists don't bring forward what socialism actually is and explain this to people, where else are people going to find out about this? And far too many people in this country are afraid to, they're still afraid to talk about socialism. I don't quite understand it. I know that there's a lot of pressure is applied to people and people are fearful of their jobs, but people could begin to talk about socialism with their friends and their neighbors and people that they work with. And, you know, we should put socialism on the table, not wait 50 or 100 years or 200 years to do this. Socialism should be put on the table for people to consider right now. If this is any kind of a democracy at all, people have the right to consider socialism. The New York Times had a big spread about was Marx right? Well, you know, let's have a discussion in this country about whether or not Marx was right. You know, that discussion has never taken place. It was going to take place prior to the Civil War, and then when the Civil War came along, Congress stopped debating that issue. They were going to debate the issue of whether or not the United States should take a socialist road or some kind of cooperative, an alternative to capitalism. But that debate never took place. Now is the time to have that debate in this country. We need that debate.
Alan, you know, I think when it really comes down to it, a lot of people are starting to consider two things. Do the capitalists have it right? When you talk about capitalism today, capitalism is almost a bad word. When people can't pay their bills, when they look at their paychecks and every paycheck they get, they're disappointed. Every paycheck, you know.
Right.
If they work for 40 hours, they're disappointed. If they work overtime, they're disappointed. Alan, I mean, if you're not killed because of the lack of lack per hour that you're getting, you kill because of the taxes that's being taken out. So, and the other thing you have to consider, over 51% of all young people now believe that, you know, they are open to socialist ideas, because you can see in today's world that capitalism doesn't work. I mean, anyone that has any brains at all can see that capitalism, working people can see that capitalism has been a total failure. But Alan, I just want to give you the last word on this this subject that we had today. And as I mentioned, we have Alan Mackey. He has joined our program today on interpreting the minimum wage debate. Alan, have your last word, and then I'd like for you to give information on how people can reach you.
Well, in my opinion, we got to start to really change the debate that's taking place in this country around the minimum wage. We have to start to stress that wages have to be considered in relation to cost of living. This is, to me, this is the most important part of this discussion about the minimum wage, and it's not being talked about. The other aspect is that we have a cost of living crisis that working class families are experiencing. This is not being talked about. If we as socialists and leftists and liberals and progressives don't put these things out on the table, they're not going to be talked about. We can see the politicians refuse to talk about these two important issues, the cost of living crisis and cost of living in relation to wages. They refuse to talk about this. They're pulling figures from hats thinking that we'll be satisfied with a bone. A meatless bone is what they want to throw us, and we shouldn't be satisfied with that. Even my dog Fred, he knows enough to keep barking until he gets some meat on a bone. You know, working people got to start to raise hell.
Alan, how can our listeners reach you?
They can call me at 218-386-2432, or they can Google my name, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll come across my blog, the Podunk Blog.
Alan, I always enjoy having you on the program. I look forward to having you on our program in a couple of weeks. Once again, thanks to our listeners for joining the Socialist Insight. We'll see you next time. Good night.
Thanks for having me again, Stuart.